welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
I just noticed I don't sound like Marge Simpson this week.
No, you don't. You sound
that's kind of great.
Sounding more like Aaron Ryan this week.
I know it.
Yeah. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape can get you pretty much anything you want in the way of John Deere products. They can get you tractors, loaders, implements, mowers, you name it, they got it. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com. And mowing season's just about over. What are we, 90 degrees today?
They wanted to, at the state level, they wanted to do no-mow May.
No-mow May?
Yeah. They wanted nobody to mow in May.
Oh.
I know. I was like, what?
Really?
No-mow May? What does that mean?
When can you
mow? Yeah, people were like, if they don't mow in May, there's going to be really big fires later. And everybody's like, oh, okay, that's a dumb idea. God. Yeah, so if you hear that they're doing no-mo May, yeah, that...
May is your last shot at getting everything
that got walked
in
back.
Shape. Yeah, for the old fire season.
Yeah, how big of a dunce are you, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, don't mow. Let it get tall and dry. Don't water it either.
Yeah.
Because that...
You could go stomp it down.
No fire's ever starting to dry grass.
No.
That's stupid. Who would believe that?
No.
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot of that going around. Who would believe that? Hey, you know, just as an FYI, it is May 15th, 2022. And so they just had the vote, the very unpopular vote. It was unpopular no matter where you went on the Ukraine bill.
Yeah.
And I'll post some stuff on the page today so that you can see it. For those of you that are on my email list, it's the same stuff, so don't knock yourselves out. But when you look at the detail of really what happened with that bill, the difficulty is the Biden administration sent a whole bunch of munitions to Ukraine, and the recent bill actually replaces those. So we're not sending a check.
Replaces ours.
Right. Replaces our munitions. And there's a factory in Huntsville, Alabama, that's going to be working for like the next 5 years. They just funded 5 years of operation. They make, I'm going to get it wrong, Stinger missiles or something. Anyway, we have to have that stuff on hand. And whether you think it was a good idea to give it to the Ukrainians or not, they did and left us without. So a lot of that is going to our own defense industry. And the aid-type stuff, a lot of that's going to be run through the State Department. Got opinions there, as do a lot of people. Not the greatest thing, but bottom line is a check did not go over to the Ukrainians for $40 billion so they could just, whatever they do with it, wash it back through the Biden's family trust. That's not actually how that worked. I would be happy to post the detail. I'll do that while we're talking to Dr. Chen. And I wanted to let you know, too, that next week we have Marcos Rodas. And he has been involved with Turning Point and just a ton of groups. Let's see. Hold on. I'm not on that page. I was on the wrong page. It was a pretty long list, too. It's kind of interesting. He's been on OANN, Daily Caller, Fox, Turning Point, PragerU. He works on campus reform. He works on all this kind of stuff in public policy and was a military police officer, United States Army veteran, and kind of a all-around interesting guy. I've never met him. Hmm. But I was talking to a gal the other day, and she said, oh, have you ever had Marcos on your show? I'm like, nope, don't even know anybody named Marcos. So,
well, you will.
Now we do.
Yeah, that's right.
So anyway, I posted his little bio for next week, and we will also have Sheriff Mike Johnson, the Shasta County Sheriff, on, at which point we will probably talk about his opponent, John Green, who took money from a cannabis cartel in Shasta Lake City in 2018.
In case anybody didn't know that.
Yeah, in case I didn't find any other opportunities to work that in. Yeah, and honestly, I'll post, that was posted last week. So if you don't think that's true, it's right there on his 460 filings. And I'm not sure how you run for sheriff if you take money from marijuana industry. That doesn't make sense, especially in an area that's overrun with marijuana cartels. So those couple of things are there. Might as well pick those scabs early and move on.
Yeah.
Okay. Back to our friend Dr. Chen. He is always a wealth of information. And so we thought, you know, we haven't talked to him since February. I think it's the longest spell we've ever had where we didn't chat with him. But with all the stuff that's going on and we're hearing about people being locked in buildings and all sorts of things, who better than Dr. Chen to come on and give us the 411? So good afternoon, Dr. Chen.
Hello.
Hi.
Good afternoon.
I don't know where you want to start on this train wreck.
All right. Yeah. Well, I start with hello to both of you. Long time no talking.
Look at that. How polite you are. We just like roll right into it. But, yeah, I looked. I couldn't believe it. I thought, I haven't talked to him since February. I went back. I checked the archives. No, true. Haven't talked to you since February. Crazy.
Yeah. So I think let's start with the crisis, the pandemic crisis in China. Of course, this whole thing starts with China back in late 2019, even though the Chinese authority denied that. You know, they put the earlier date as, you know, 2020, January 2020, but you know, it started out in fall of 2019. And then there are ironclad zeroing out policy got China back to production earlier than the rest of the world in 2020 and also some part of the 2021. But now the crisis has gone back to China. While the rest of the world is slowly getting out of it through both successful development of some vaccines, certainly more successful than what China has, but also the more tolerant you know pandemic strategy, more humane, basically allowing the community immunity to take over. And so the rest of the world are easing out on pandemic policies, but China is pushing it to an extreme, even more, you know, severe or more draconian than when it first started out in Wuhan.
Why do you think that is?
Right. Okay. So. It is. I haven't seen people talking about this, okay? The way I see it, it is two crises in one. It's not just one crisis. And this is, if I can get this across in this show, it will be a success, okay? It is not a single crisis, but two crises. Right? And the second one is the one that has been overlooked. But there are forces behind it. The first crisis, of course, is the zeroing out strategy, which is totally unnecessary because the Omicron is not as deadly, not even close. It is very fast spreading. Right? It's so fast that there's no way you can overcome it by social distancing or by locking down, because it just spreads so fast. And it is, there's not a clear explanation scientifically how that works yet, but it is very fast. But it is also very benign in a way compared to the original pandemic. The death rate of Omicron is actually less or about the same as flu. Right? So, you know, there's no need to lock down the city for a clue, or giving shot. So for a flu, right? But here's the first crisis, right? It is the crisis for the communism. It's a political system. It's self-claimed advantage over democracy. Right? Because I mentioned that back in 2020, in part of 2021, the Chinese communist regime used, you know, ironclad lockdown to forcibly slow down the spread of the pandemic, right? At the cost, right? At great cost of the general public, right? But it got China back to manufacturing ahead of other major nations. Right? So that gave the communist dictators a false sense that, well, actually, even if it's not false, they're going to claim it anyway, right? Because they're known to do that. Okay? But anyway, Xi Jinping, the head of the CCP, the Chinese Communist Party, claimed that pandemic has caused the East rising and the rise of the East and the descent of the West, meaning, you know, China has gone ahead than the free world, that the West has gone downhill and China is moving up. Right? So he claimed the history and had a celebration, a meeting celebrating China's successful victory over COVID-19. Right? So that is done. That's chiseled in stone. Now the pandemic is coming back. Right? So challenging all those previous claims. Right? So there's a phase that the CCP cannot allow itself to lose. Right? It, regardless how, you know, low the death rate is, how not as threatening as the original version, the current Omicron, not even close to the original COVID-19 version, right? Just to show that that China's or the communist approach of fighting the pandemic is superior than the free world. And the CCP made a political decision, right, that it has to stick to its policy so as to show its political correctness or political advantage over the free world. So that is unnecessary. So that was crisis number one, that a unnecessary locking down of a city. But there's a second crisis, made it a lot worse. Right? Locking down a city, meaning you shut down the production, you shut down a lot of things. But that doesn't mean you shut down people's livelihood. Right? That doesn't mean you need to shut down the supply to the city. Right? Now, the supply to the city never stopped. There are a lot of, Shanghai being the most important, the industrial base of China, account for, you know, Shanghai, last year, Shanghai was the only major metropolitan that have contributed positively to government's budgeting. Right? Every other city has drawn are in red. Right? The only exception is Shanghai. So many the central government organized a lot of the food or supply into Shanghai. But those were deliberately prevented or blocked from reaching the general public in Shanghai. So that is the second crisis. Now, who is doing that? That is the real question, right? Who is blocking that? A lot of food has been rotten, and some, they're just, the information is so extensive, so I don't want to go over them to overburden our audience, but they are just, you know, tweeters, there were TikTok, there are all kinds of videos showing that there was a deliberate interruption of food distribution. There were also officials who profit themselves, right? They monopolized the supply and then sell them. These are donated. So, your supply from other provinces and cities. Right? Yet they took control of them, letting most of them rot, and then they sell some of it at exorbitant prices. And so there was this concerted campaign against Shanghai people. Right? Who are doing this? Right? And this can only be those who are in the position to do this. Right? So these are the political enemy of Xi Jinping, the head of the CCP. So this is a political struggle between two factions within the CCP, with 26 million, or actually, with, you know, transmigrating people, there are probably over 30 million. With 30 million people at stake, right? They're doing this political fight with 30 million people's lives as, you know,
It's kind of crazy, but it's nice to know that even in a really hardcore dictatorship, you still wind up with factions. I think we have people in our country that think, you know, if only we had somebody iron-fisted in charge, you know, we'd cut back on all these little people who are squabbling about things. It's like, nah, no, not really. I guess as long as there are people in it, we're going to have that. Got to come back in just a second. Have to take a quick break. Our guest today is Dr. Shizong Chen. We are talking about China, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. What shall we do about them? When they move into your neighborhood, they take over but good. They want you all body and soul. Then it's just your body. Yeah, make a move in one place, and darned if it doesn't show up someplace else. So,
we were talking about the different factions.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. How do they How do they get to, I don't know what the hell, how I even want to ask the question, but how do you manage having another faction in a country like China run by the CCP? Like, is it the CCP factions?
CCP. Right. the factions within the CCP
seems almost impossible.
Has always been a fact.
Right? Okay.
And cutthroat political fight inside the CCP is a lot more than the open two-party or several-party competition in the free world. Right? It is like mafia, right? So mafia supposed to be a gang, right? Yet within mafia, the cutthroat murder and it's much worse than outside people would know, right? So, and the CCP is the world's most vicious gang. So this particular faction fight, right, has actually exist for the past 10 years, right? Start 2000, but its root actually rooted back in 1999, the persecution of Falun Gong. So this brings up an unusual concept that not many people would understand in the free world, and this is the issue of the political legacy, right? The CCP political legacy. So, that the so-called political legacy, right? When we say political legacy, we usually take that as a positive thing, right? But inside the CCP, it is the opposite. A political issue can be defined, a practical definition would be a political maneuver for which the leader feared others would fall him for. Or a Achilles heel of a leader's governor, right, or his political career. So first of all, to be in a position to leave behind a political legacy is not easy. So far, throughout the past close to 100 years, right now it's over 100 years of a Communist Party existing in China, there were only four CCP leaders that have been in the position to leave behind political legacy. The number one, the first one is what we know as Chairman Mao, right? Mao Zedong. And his political legacy is a cultural revolution, right? Towards his late years, he knew, he talked about it actually. He said his political career would be defined by two things. The first one is getting the CCP into power, and he never worried about that. Right? And the second issue was his launching of the Cultural Revolution, right? The infamous one. Right? So it was the second one he was worried the most. Right? And then he spent his last 20 years fighting to defend that legacy. Right? Just to defend his legacy, he deposed two of his heir apparent. First one, General Lin Biao, many people may not even know the name, and then Deng Xiaoping, a lot of people know about. Deng Xiaoping was the reformer, supposedly. Right? We which I don't quite agree anyway. And the reason he deposed of them was because Mao did not completely trust their loyalty to the Cultural Revolution. Now, he doesn't doubt their loyalty to him personally, but he doubted that one day when he passed, if they will carry on or whether they will defend his Cultural Revolution policy. And he was right. His fear vindicated, because within a month of his death, right, his successors arrest his wife and his his former political loyalist, and turned terminated his Cultural Revolution policy. And then that was Mao, and then Deng Xiaoping had his political legacy, which is the June 4th massacre, and to defend that, he as well deposed those he didn't trust. Right? His personal friend, actually. Again, he does not, he didn't doubt their personal loyalty to him, but nonetheless, he doubted their loyalty to his June 4th massacre policy. And then the third one is Jiang Zemin, for his persecution of Falun Gong. The fourth one is Xi Jinping. Those are the four, among all CCP leaders, those are the four most powerful ones. Only when you're the most powerful one, you can make a mistake that will impact the nation so badly that it becomes, that they become Achilles heel for their political career or their political reputation. So Xi Jinping is the last one, right? And Xi Jinping had, if he was given the choice, he probably would make taking over Taiwan as his political legacy, right? If we have time, we'll come back to that, because that is impacted by the Russian-Ukraine war. But he unwisely take on the pandemic as his political legacy. The pandemic first happened in Wuhan. He wasn't even there. Right? Yet somehow he claimed he personally, which is not true, it cannot be possibly true. He wasn't even there, but he claimed to have personally directed, planned, directed, administered the handling of the pandemic. Right? And so that becomes his liability. Right? Of course, as I said earlier, China was out of was able to resume manufacturing ahead of other nations based on its draconian lockdown policy. But that was under the background of a very dangerous COVID-19. Right? Now it's a different virus. So Omicron is a benign virus. You will still have symptoms, but they're much lighter, much, much less deadly. Right? Yet to insist on his previous wisdom, so-called wisdom of the lockdown, he ordered the current lockdown. Now, Jiang's faction, on the other hand, worried about its political policy. persecuting the Falun Gong. And the successor of Jiang was Hu Jintao, and the successor of Hu Jintao is Xi Jinping now. So those two leaders, right, did not actively implement Jiang's persecution of Falun Gong. So Jiang was never comfortable with, or the whole faction was never comfortable with Xi and with Hu. And not only that, to fend off Jiang faction's pressure, in his first term, Xi Jinping carried on a major anti-corruption campaign against Jiang's faction, because Jiang's faction is the most corrupted faction ever, even within CCP. That is the most corrupted faction.
What do you have to do to be the most corrupted? I mean, like how do you get that award? It just seems like the whole thing is super corrupt. How do you even sort out, like, who's doing more than the next guy?
Because they have turned everything in China, what I call a power ownership. I have introduced this concept in this show once before, but this is again something that I think international scholars have missed. Right? Jiang has promoted what I say is systematic corruption under his rule, that whoever loyal to him will be given all the opportunity to make all kinds of money, right? And whoever opposed him would be demoted or even persecuted, right? And so he created his power base by promoting corruption, right? Under other leaders, there are terrible leaders in the history, okay? And they have used personal award or a personal favor to recruit those who are loyal to them, right? But Jiang is different in that he institutionalized corruption as a way to climb up the political ladder, because he only trusts those who are corrupted, right? Those who are not corrupted, he didn't trust, because he thinks those leaders, those officials who have some conscience, will not listen to him. Right? Well, any people who have conscience will have their own mind, maybe. Right? Only the most corrupted will obey to him absolutely. And so that is why that is most corrupted.
Well, that says a lot about your regime when you only trust the corrupted officials and not the uncorrupted officials.
Yeah, when you're separating your corruption into different piles, that's like
as to who you can trust.
I just had a really non sequitur thought. You know, it's like trick or treating, and everybody gives you green jelly beans, and you got to sort out which green jelly beans are worse than the other ones. We all know that's not possible. Got to take a quick break again. This is happening so frequently. It's like every 20 minutes. It's the craziest thing ever. It feels like every 20 minutes, doesn't it?
We'll have to watch the clock, see if that's true.
Yeah, nuts to Travis in there who's keeping track, giving us all the hand signs. All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
see nothing wrong. Spreading myself around. Everybody's talking all this stuff about me.
Song all about rules. So fitting. So fitting. All the things you can't do. But the CCP doesn't probably have a theme song, do they? It seems a little too cheerful for them. That's the problem. No fun.
Let me give you an example closer to home.
Okay.
So you understand how corrupted that regime is, right? That faction is. Right? So, remember I talked about, generals of barbarism several times in this show. That is the invention of this faction, the Jiang faction.
Oh, the generous barbarism?
That faction is so corrupted that it was able to corrupt this country to beyond recognition now. Right?
So for the people who have not heard your example of the generous barbarism, give that to them, because I think it's something worth considering as we all have to buy things, and when we make those choices, I know a lot of times people say, well, I don't want to support, what's going on, but I thought that we never forgot that when you told us.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, back in 1989, the CCP carried on the June 4th massacre, most people remember, right? And Jiang was the one that benefited the most from that massacre because he was promoted to the head of the CCP after the June 4th massacre. So that's background number one, right? And then background number two is on Christmas Day of 1991, the former Soviet Union formally declared it's dissolving, right? It's dissolving into 15 independent states or republics. Right? And so between 1989 to 1992, right, the Chinese Communist Party faced two crises. The number one is the crisis of legitimacy in governing, and it killed and murdered, massacred its own people, right, on June 4th. And then, with the world collapse of communism, its ideology is also in crisis. Right? So, at that moment, right, to survive communism, the CCP under this Jiang guy, right, this Jiang Zemin, then came up with this, what I call Janus Bobism. It claimed to the world, right, unlike previous dictators, unlike Hitler, unlike Stalin, the CCP under Zhao says, we will not threaten you. Not only we will not threaten you, we will benefit you. We'll be generous, right? We'll share our, national resources, our, big market, right? And you don't even have to sacrifice anything. You don't have to do anything. The only thing is, just look away, right? Just mind your own business. Don't speak up about what we do, right? And so it's a bribery, because people all over the world know how barbaric communism is. But that barbarism is only against the Chinese people. Right? For the people that it has no control yet, right? The CCP pretend to be very generous, right? Yes, they're particularly generous to the Wall Street, to the multinationals, right? And so this is a newer version of barbarism that the world did not know how to respond. And no government was able to resist the enticement. They all fall under that the huge economic incentive in doing this with the CCP. And so one by one, they all compete for the CCP's economic favor. And therefore, looking away from what happened in China, even now, right, maybe worse now. Right? Well, I know it's worse now. Right? And so that corrupted the Western's principles and values. No other regime was able to do that before. The USSR was not able to do it. Right? Hitler was not able to do it. No regime was able to do it. Right? But nowadays, and most Americans do not even know they have been invaded by the CCP. Let me give you a very easy comparison. This country is supposed to be a free country, that you're allowed to, speak your mind. You're allowed to support this or oppose the other, right? But when it comes to China, when it comes to the CCP, those who do not criticize the CCP will be able to make money both in the U.S. as well as inside China. China is a big market, and the CCP controls that. Right? CCP can, open its faucet, and then you get your bucket full. Okay, and if the CCP decided to not do business with you, cannot make money in China. So that cuts a line there in the United States, that those who show discontent or criticism towards CCP's dictatorship will not get to make money in China. And those who do not criticize the CCP will be able to make money both in China and in the United States. In a competitive economy, a slight advantage will over time, we all know, will lead to, big difference. But in this case, with CCP, you know, giving out economic favor, those who support China will have major advantage over its competitors. So in this way, the free economy in this country is already manipulated or impacted or influenced by CCP already. Right? So those who do not speak against the CCP will build up their political cash or their economic power quickly over those who criticize CCP. And no wonder this country will adopt the policies that will benefit the CCP. And so in a way, CCP has changed our political system as well as our economic lives in a way that most people do not even recognize. And this is just a simple example. My colleagues and I, we have a team that have done systematic research in this. So our articles will be published, one after another. So we are in the process of publishing many of those. So this will come out soon. So once I get those, I'll send to your way.
Oh, good.
Okay.
But
then
post them. Yeah. That is how China has changed its country dramatically, right? In a way that has never happened before, and we don't even know about it, right? And now, let me go back to Shanghai's crisis, right? The most corrupted faction of the Jiang faction actually is responsible for the second crisis, for cutting the supply to Shanghai, for making life miserable to Shanghai people. And the goal is to cause discontent, both domestically and, more importantly, or more powerfully, not necessarily more important, but more powerfully, international resentment towards the other faction, the Xi faction, because locking down Shanghai causes a major breakdown of supply chain from China. Right? So many companies, particularly those multinationals on the Wall Street, will then want to unseat the first faction, the Xi faction, and get Jiang's faction back to their old times when generous barbarism runs the day. Right? That was before 2012. Wall Street had its honeymoon, or actually honey years. Honey years in the bed with Jiang's faction. And this country is about to make another major mistake in trying to get that faction back in power. This is particularly dangerous for the United States because the quickest way to lose God's blessing is to side with Satan. And Jiang faction is the worst enemy of humanity. And the Wall Street and the deep state are right now pushing for that. And this is what this is what's behind the Shanghai crisis and others dealing out policy or crisis in China, and I think maybe we can talk more about this in the second hour. But here is the greatest danger for the United States. It, dealing with Jiang once before has already caused great damage to this country, and I think we are at the danger of repeating that.
Now we're going to do it again.
I hope that doesn't come true.
All right. We will chat about that next hour. Our guest is Dr. Shezong Chen. You are listening to We the People, and we will be back with you after the news. You can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Second hour of We the People Radio. So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
All day, every day, and twice on Sundays.
That's right.
So say it again.
That's right.
Bill Cundiff, Bill Cundiff.
There you go. Hey, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And Pape sells everything John Deere. They also have Honda Power products and Steel Power products. So if you're looking to spruce up the yard or the property, go by and see them. They're located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
And it's P-A-P-E.
Yeah.
Just in case it sounds like some other stuff, because it's actually deceptively simple, but often confused.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. Can't have that. Okay, so we thought we would visit with our good friend Dr. Shezong Chen, since we haven't chatted with him since February, as we noticed. It is May 15th, 2022, and it seems like all we talk about is Ukraine. And God bless him, but I mean, what the heck? The rest of the world is looming, and you can almost feel it sometimes. You know, the Chinese are like over there rubbing their little hands together, making plans, while it's like, hey, look, everybody's looking at Ukraine. You know, let's get our plans together and I don't know. Dot dot dot. Dr. Chen. Find out what they're up to.
China's looking at Ukraine as well, and it's not going all that great for Russia. So I wonder if they're maybe having second thoughts about moving on Taiwan. So,
well, and that's the whole, I mean, when you get down to it, I know we have so much in this country that needs to be done. Our border, just, I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. The Biden administration is never doing those things. So when people see, like, they passed money having to do with the Ukraine thing through Congress, it's a really just not accurate to say, well, we should have spent it on something else, like that was a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Because that wasn't a choice. And we have sent Ukraine lots of our, you know, 1980s stuff, munitions and whatnot. And we've got to build those back here. If we don't, we wind up in trouble. So that's what happens when you have a commander-in-chief who's a knucklehead. You're stuck with the decisions that they make, and you wind up sometimes having to make some bad decisions in response to that. But you can't just say, oh, well, so what? We sent all our stuff to Ukraine. I guess we'll do without, in light of the rest of the world all the stuff that's happening. And you can't just ignore the other people over there, the other NATO guys. I mean, I think we did that once before, right? I think that's how Hitler got a foothold. You know, we were like, oh, it's not our fight. So I don't know. I don't know where it goes, and anybody who tells you they absolutely know is, I don't know, probably lying, actually. I don't know how you could possibly know. There's so much crazy stuff happening.
Oh, yeah.
So Dr. Chen, I neglected to give you any scoop on his bio. I just kind of assumed, hey, we're all old friends, and so we'll just start this show. I thought that was kind of weird. I've never done that. I know, we forgot to tell people. You've been active in projects concerning China for over 30 years, so he didn't just start this idea. He's founded, co-founded, or been spokesperson for a number of organizations concerning China and spoken extensively on issues related to China. He began his activism back in 1989. Slightly after I graduated from college, so he's been doing this for a while, when he helped to organize supporting activities during the 1989 Beijing student movement. Outraged by the June 4th massacre, Dr. Chen founded the Tiananmen Square Foundation and has served on the board of the Press Freedom Guardian and was elected the vice president of the Independent Federation of Chinese Students and Scholars in the U.S. I'm going to skip to the end because the intermediary stuff is super interesting, and we've learned a lot from him on the science side, especially since we happened to meet him prior to the pandemic. He gave us lots of good intel there. He was born in China in 1962 and at 15 entered the gifted program at China University of Science and Technology. He came to the U.S. in 1982 to study and received his PhD in molecular biology at the University of California, San Diego. He currently owns and runs a molecular biology startup in San Diego. But you've always kept track of what's going on back in China. And I don't know if you want to tell us this, but I was curious, do you still have, I mean, I'm assuming you have relatives who still live in China.
Yes, I have some, but...
they pretend they don't know you?
Most.
It's probably safer.
They are. Yeah, the closer family members are either no longer there or they're in the United States.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. It's much safer for them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's funny because we have two Dr. Chens that we speak with on this program, and the other Dr. Chen is also a scientist, but she's a girl. And is Chen sort of like a Smith in China? Okay, that's kind of what I thought. So that's good. That makes your family a little bit safer. You're traveling under the most popular name in China.
It's probably the fourth most popular last name in China.
No kidding. It was funny because for a while there, it's like, no, wait, which Dr. Chen is this? When we first started meeting all of you, it was tricky to keep things organized. Okay, so... With all the focus on Ukraine, what are you hearing from, you know, people out of China and news out of China? What are they looking at when they see all this?
Right, that is again an interesting thing to untangle. Just like what I said earlier, the Shanghai crisis or two crises in one. The Ukraine thing is worth deep diving into. Now, we don't have enough time to do that, so I want to take a shortcut. Right? Let me just say this. Right? The United States have stood up against some enemies before, has dealt with other countries before, right? Including the threatening ones, like Hitler's Germany,
mm-hmm.
and or Stalin's USSR. Right? But those, if we look back, right, those actually made the United States stronger. But when it comes to the CCP made the United States weak, much weaker. So there was, even in the Hitler days, even in the Stalin days, the United States was never so vulnerable. So when I, just the last hour when I said, the Shanghai crisis is breaking up the world supply chain. And so many, international opinions against Xi Jinping, the Xi's faction. But shouldn't they ask how they get themselves into that kind of trouble, right? They themselves are responsible, partly or mainly responsible for giving China the control over their supply chain. Now, in this case, in this Ukraine war, then the United States should ask, right, why after 50 years of World War II, we have this largest war in European again, in Europe again. Right? And this again has a lot to do with China. Remember, back in 1970, right or wrong, the United States under Nixon had a policy of separating, drive a wedge between China and the Soviet Union at that time. So the United States has pulled China from the communism camp towards the United States, right or wrong. Now, 50 years after that, two things happened. Number one, the United States basically raised, there's a Chinese term called raise up a tiger to threaten yourself, right? So the United States is entirely responsible for helping the CCP into a threatening second most powerful country in the world. There was not a second most powerful nation in the world that threatened the United States before. You know, Japan was the second largest economy for a while. Germany was the second largest economy for a while, but they didn't threaten the United States. And but for the last 30 years, Wall Street made a lot of money from China. But there's a recent book. Recently, there's a book, Stonefish, titled American Second. That book told about, you know, how Wall Street helped China to get strong at the cost of making the United States weak. So without China's support, without CCP support, now the United States has finally come to see that, right? China is behind Putin's war. Right? But not only that, right? If we look at the 50 years, we suddenly realize, oops, the United States now is pushing Russia towards the CCP. So if we look at the policy change of the past 50 years, we should wonder, how and when the United States have undone what Nixon started 50 years ago to separate the two communist powers. All right, 50 years ago. From then now to pushing Russia back to the CCP and pushing them together. And that is that should at least be seriously thought over, if not thoroughly discussed by some policymakers, by some scholars. And that is a major, very large scale political policy change. And I think that's a major failure. So this war, first of all, this war is totally avoidable. If President Trump is in power, this war would not have happened. And it didn't happen.
Right.
Right. Before President Trump, a mini war happened. You know, Crimea invasion. Right. And some of our senators was already talking about wars against Russia at that time. And then, fortunately, President Trump come on the stage, and then we had, you know, 4 years of relatively, actually, that 4 years is the most peaceful time, you know, in recent years for the United States. There was no war.
Yeah, he's a really good example of that, the idea of peace through strength. I mean, people looked at him and they were like, you know, if we do this, that guy is not just all talk. Needless to say, the folks we have in now are mostly holdovers from the Obama era, so they already know how they play their hand.
Well, he was tough on China, but he kept the trade agreements in place and...
wasn't a psycho about it.
No, and kept everybody talking. We're not really doing that now. We're rattling all the time.
Demonize and hide. We're playing a lot of hide and go seek, which will probably get us into trouble. We have to take a really quick break. We'll come back with our guest, Dr. Shezong Chen, and you are listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Nice.
Isn't that the honest truth? Everybody does want to rule the world. It's kind of funny. Nobody wants to take care of their own country. They want to run the world. I'm like, you know, I don't know. I can hear my dad in the back of my head like, okay, you take care of the stuff that's going on in your country, and then, well, maybe we'll talk about the world.
Yeah.
But nope, they just want to...
Take care of your own stuff first.
Yeah.
We don't seem to be able to do that here.
Anywhere. Nobody wants to run their own country. Well,
especially us. I mean, we're just letting everything go and just worry about everybody else's borders, everybody else's...
I know. Everybody else has sovereign borders. We don't. I know. It's incredibly frustrating, and people are going to have to get sick of it enough to make a change in personnel because they want the people who don't have the steering wheel to fix it. But with no steering wheel,
Speaking of steering wheel, our transportation secretary. He could do a heck of a job.
Don't make me say his name.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay.
Another overqualified person for the job.
Yeah, Mayor Pete. Yeah. Sorry, Dr. Chen. Back to you.
Yeah.
We got sidetracked.
No problem. So
its brakes are so distracting.
No problem. So, now, if we look at the past 30 years, we're talking about how the United States have been weakened by the CCP. If we look at who are responsible for that, and you will find that those people who are responsible for that, most of them, probably all of them have benefited from China. Think about that. That the Hunter family, the Bill Clinton family, the Obama family, right, and the Bush family, right, they all have benefited from China. I'm sure if the Trump family want to do that, they would have done even better. But good for them, President Trump did not fall for that.
No, he really didn't. American, he was not taken in by their stuff at all.
Right. And they're talking about right now, you know, we talk about border, right? The south part of the border. And that, if we change the precedent, that can still be built. Right? But if we want to build a border, a figurative border or whatever, mine border, against CCP, good luck. It has already passed that. They already passed that stage. This country has never been invaded by communism before the CCP, right? In the Cold War, communist victims would escape to the United States and serve as examples and reminders of this country, what communism is like, how terrible that is. And that will reinforce this country's, the people in this country's resolution against the dictatorship. But now, what we hear, the media, what the media promotes is how prosperous China is, how people made money in China, and then Chinese people, large number of them, they come to this country. They no longer talk about, well, some of them still do, right? But people like me or other people who talk about, you know, how oppressive that system is, we got suppressed. Not by you, but by you know, me, you invite me to talk here. But mainstream media, you know, silence us. Right? So instead of hearing how terrible the communism is, people in the United States learn about, you know, told about how good that is. Right? I remember in 2018, around the, you know, the birthday of Karl Marx, New York Times even had a serious article praising Marxism. And so this country has changed completely from being very alert against the oppressive communism to now to be completely accepting that. And that's why I say, well, not only accepting that, but envious of that. And that's why I say, build up that war against communism again. Good luck. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, but they label it socialism now, so that's not as bad.
Somehow it seems to be better.
Right. So that's what has weakened this country to beyond what we can remember. Right now, this country cannot even have a defense against communism because I call it a subnation, the subnation nation of CCP against the United States they have already accomplished that. Our country has been completely invaded by the CCP at the subnational level. We still have nominal national defense, but at the subnational level, right? Our universities, our sister cities, our companies has already been infiltrated by the CCP. Right? Mm-hmm. So there's not a, against the former Soviet Union, there was a front line there. Right now, there's not even a front line. Right? And so that, if we say that benefit the CCP, right, it didn't benefit Chinese people. It didn't even though China's economy, you know, according to the media, right, is booming, right, or or, you know, the envious of the world, but that most of Chinese people did not get to enjoy it. Now, Wall Street people have benefit great deal, but the general public in the United States did not benefit from it. We lose our job to China's slavery. We lose... I recently... A friend of mine who had been jailed in 4 years had been recently released. So I talked to him last month. In jail, he was in a large cell in China, and he learned a great deal of what's going on inside. And he said because he was forced to to do labor in jail and produce many different products, and I asked him to write them up. Right? And he said, if that gets disclosed, it's going to cause major earthquakes. Right now, he said, inside China, there's all the clothes factories. There's no longer regular clothes manufacturing. There's no longer clothes factories. You know, the factories that produce clothes that export to the United States. All those are produced in jail.
Dang.
No kidding. Now, that's a news story. You don't hear anybody talking about that. So they're using prison labor to mm-hmm. produce products that are sold here in the United States.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is from her firsthand, right? And so that's why I say, you know, that... Our country's elite, the deep states dealing with the CCP, is hurting people in both countries.
Sure. Right?
And the faction that's most responsible for that is the Jiang faction, where what I said, you know, the faction that's responsible for promoting generous poverty. And the Wall Street, of course, wants to go back to that because they benefit the most from there. And so right now, they are working. I'm sure there's a hotline between that and the Jiang faction in China, trying to help that faction get back their power. So... The Wall Street and the elites and the deep state can go back their honey years to make boatloads of money from China. And that is what's behind the crisis, the pandemic crisis in China, the political infight, because... the Jiang faction is using Shanghai, using the discontent of the general public in China, and then the international outrage or anger at Xi for cutting down their supply chain, not knowing that Jiang faction is actually responsible for the second crisis. As I said, there are two crises in one. Yes, the zeroing out policy is unwise, but that was not the one that's responsible for causing outcry, you know, at the domestic level.
Sure.
It is the Jiang faction who are in control of the Shanghai local government that is cutting off the supply to Shanghai people. So to force Shanghai people to basically misdirect their discontent towards the C faction. And the main media, the mainstream media, and the deep state and Wall Street, George Soros, for example, they're all advocating for bringing down Xi so they can go back to their business, doing their business with the Jiang faction in China.
Right,
so that is the Shanghai situation.
Wow.
Now, the Ukraine is, in a way, similar. That, first of all, without China, Russia would have stopped the war right now, right? And also, strange enough, to me, the current administration did not seem to want to that war. Did not seem to want the war to end soon.
No.
To me, they want the war to extend.
Well,
there are many ways.
Yeah, they didn't make a very tough play. But again, you look at the cast of characters, I don't really know that they had it in them, but they didn't press hard for negotiation and for ending it at the very beginning. It was kind of a lot of half-hearted talk.
Right. It is those half-hearted talk makes me feel that it is in their interest to have the war extended rather than have it end soon. And this, again, is at the cost of Ukraine people and Russian people.
Well, and the countries that are nearby, because if you live in another country that borders on this, you look and go, how long before they come over here?
Right. The refugee situation is getting out of hand.
Oh, yeah, that's been out of hand. Before we take a break and leave the story of your friend over there that wound up in jail in China, do you call it prison or do you call it jail? Do you have prison and jail there?
Oh, I'm not sure the difference.
Yeah. Our prisons are kind of big. Our jails are usually run by our counties. I just wondered if you had, like, little jails and then giant prisons. What exactly can you say, like, you know, what landed him there?
Oh, his practice of Falun Gong.
Oh, practicing Falun Gong. Okay, I thought it might be jaywalking or something like that. Now, as long as it was a serious crime, good grief. So how do they know? How do they know if you practice Falun Gong?
They
spy on you, I'm sure. But
Falun Gong, before 1999, Falun Gong is openly practiced in China. And again, our media, right, saying that the Chinese government banned Falun Gong, that never happened. That's not true at all. The Chinese government never formally banned the practice of Falun Gong. It, again, is this Jiang Zemin, who has no power in banning a practice. Right? This has to go through a proper legal procedure. Right? So it was only him as the figurehead of the, his position is the national chairman of the country. Right? So as a national chairman, his power is to receive foreign guests, assign ambassador. So he doesn't have the executive power as the United States president. He is more like some of the European country where their power is like as the state head, right, instead of administrative power. And so to have the law to ban a certain thing, it has to go through the so-called the People's Congress, and that never passed.
No kidding, but they can put people in jail anyway. Okay, now I have a lot more questions. We have to take a really quick break, though, and come back and ask them afterwards. Sorry. Asked a long thing right at the wrong time. But yeah. That's kind of interesting because I guess you figure if they can put people in jail, it must be against the law. Not that that's a good idea, but to find out that they're doing it regardless, that's even crazier. We'll be right back. You are listening to We the People. Get ready for it. Bill's going to give you his big finale here. You can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
Kind of.
I am the eye in the sky, looking at you. I can read your mind. I am the maker of rules, dealing with fools. I can cheat you blind, and I don't need to see it.
Resist that one on the heels of going to jail for practicing Falun Gong that isn't a crime.
Well, it wasn't
what the heck?
It wasn't voted in as okay, so that makes it a crime, I guess.
No, it has to be voted in as a crime.
Yeah.
So when you have to do time for that, how long was he stuck in there?
I have a number of friends, but this one was sentenced to 4 years.
Holy cow!
I have another friend who was sentenced to 3.5 years. I know many. I actually know many Falun Gong practitioners that are in jail. I'm personal friends with them, and so their story, forever stuck in my mind.
Yeah.
But let me go back to that was China. Falun Gong was never banned in China.
Huh.
So let me go back to the history of Falun Gong a little bit. The practice was introduced to the public in 1993. From 1992 to 1999, that's 7 years, right? Falun Gong became very popular and grew to the following of 100 million people. And all the lectures given by the founder of Falun Gong was legally published. Actually, not only they're legally published, they were printed by government-owned print houses, right? So this is one interesting thing that under the tight control of the CCP, there's no private owned printing house at that time. Are there some now? I'm not aware of. I think they're still very difficult. Theoretically, you can set up bringing house, but the red tape, the hoop that you have to jump through, I think made it very difficult too for private bringing house.
Well, it sounds like you better be careful what you print too, or else you might not be around.
Right, and because soil is very profitable, so it's monopolized by a state-owned or government-owned spring houses, right? And so all the fungal teachings were printed by government-owned facilities or print house, a publishing house, and so everything was legal, right? And then the popularity of Falun Gong offended Jiang Zemin, who was, the national chairman of China, right? And so he was the one that he actually, many of his associates even opposed, the persecution of Falun Gong. But he basically powered it through, the dictatorship, right? He powered it through. But this is only his personal will, right? There was not a law in China, not even a administrative decision to say that Falun Gong is illegal. In fact, on the opposite, right. I'm not saying the government have that kind of power, right? But state authority, I mean the national authority in China, banned, they formally, with document, with, government, with official document, they banned 14 so-called cults. Falun Gong is not in there.
Oh, it's not one of the ones they picked as a cult?
No, right. So that is the interesting part. So right now, Falun Gong practitioners are figuring that out recently. Right? In the past few years, I was part of that effort. So right now, we have many Falun Gong practitioners. Once the police trying to arrest them, Falun practitioners ask, show us. You said Falun Gong is illegal. Show us a document. Nobody, so far, nobody was able to produce one because it never exists. So the persecution was only based on Jiang Zemin's personal declaration that he wanted to persecute Falun Gong.
Wow.
There's no legal basis. There's no administrative basis.
And it's not like you can unelect him. I mean, what are your choices in China if you don't like a policy? I guess you'd go to jail a lot. That doesn't actually get anything done, though.
Right. So there's
your recourse, like, is
right now
zero, right?
Right. Right now, there's not a way. Jiang is not in a position, right? Jiang has succeeded by Hu Jintao and then by Xi Jinping now. They did not want to continue his persecution policy, but Jiang's faction want to continue that. And so that is the very core, the cause of factional fight among Xi and Jiang, because Jiang's faction did not trust Xi Jinping. So they want to have their own people to be in power so they can resume the persecution of Falun Gong. So an interesting anecdote, right? So Hong Kong, in last March, sentenced a hooligan who participate in the beating of Falun Gong to 20 months in jail. Right?
Wow.
And so that sends a signal that outside of China, Hong Kong is how theoretically Hong Kong is a special administrative region of China, but it's still outside of mainland China, that the central government did not want to continue the persecution of Falun Gong, right? And that's why I say the United States is at risk of making the worst political mistake again, of helping the faction of persecuting Falun Gong back into position. Because, I repeat, the quickest way for the United States to lose God's blessing is to side with Satan. And to help the most evil faction within the CCP to back in power will be an offense against divinity, against God. And I think the United States is at risk of doing that again. But that's because they do not understand all this. This is more complicated, but more consequential than the United States to get involved in the religious factions in Middle East. Right? The factional fight inside China is more complicated.
Yeah, that's true. The other way is pretty straightforward. This has a lot of moving parts. And, before we run out of time here, I wanted to mention, I put a link on the page today to the Epoch Times a series, actually. It's an extensive series, How the Specter of Communism is Ruling Our World. And I don't know, somehow I missed this, but it looks like they have, I don't even know how many, they're basically episodes, and it goes on. I mean, they've done a tremendous amount of research and posted it here. And for the folks out there that maybe are not subscribers to that publication, it's very good. Covers news all over the world, and they do a very good job of it. Very factual, and the writing is excellent. But yeah, How the Specter of Communism is Ruling Our World, I thought would be worth a, looks like most of it is listening rather than reading. In this, they all look like, it looks like video. If I push this button, it's going to play.
There are video, but there are some, there are also texts as well.
Articles as well. It looks excellent. Yeah. So I just wanted to kind of direct people that way. So we're not actually totally out of time, but we always do. We always have this unceremonious, see you later, bye, ending, which is, I mean, hey, we're going to talk to you again and stuff, but we really appreciate you coming on and giving us all this information, because obviously we don't know anybody who's in jail in China or what's really going on there, and it's very helpful that you take the vantage point that you have and speak up for them in a place that maybe other people can hear, because we have folks who listen all over the place.
Well, there's a lot of reasons your mainstream media doesn't report on China, and most of them are not good reasons.
No, bad reasons.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the usual. So anyway, Dr. Chen, we really appreciate you and all of your, I know most
thank
of you,
you
do science, but we always talk to you mostly about political things in China, and we thank you for sharing your insight with us. And here's the music. All right, we're out. Sorry. You're listening to We the People. We will have a commercial-free archive for you up shortly this afternoon. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay.
play. We got minds to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.